What if I told you there was a way to solve your biggest practice challenges and connect with a thriving community all in one place? Well, the wait is over. The Best Practices Association app is here. Now available on the Apple Store and Google Play Store, this app is a way to get solutions in the palm of your hands. And the best part? It's 100% free to join. So don't wait. Download the Best Practices Association app now and start transforming the way you practice dentistry. Yo, yo, yo. Hey guys, welcome back to another awesome edition of the Best Practices Show podcast. Our job here is to challenge your thinking so you can create a better practice and a better life. And we're going to do exactly that today with a brand new guest and an old friend, Dr. Brian Laskin. I saw him at the Exchange this summer, and I thought to myself, let's get together. He'd written a couple books, and one of the books he wrote was called Unfair Care. I'm going to encourage you to read this. And what he does today is challenge how we look at the healthcare system and his mission to empower patients to take control of their own health and where all this comes together with you as a dentist. It's very enlightening. So please listen up. Hope you guys enjoy this, and we'll see you soon. Hey guys, welcome back to the Best Practices Show podcast. You know the jam. The jam around here is I find the coolest people in dentistry. I ask them the questions. They bring some great insight to help you think better about your practice and your life. And I have a new friend who's actually been an old friend who I got a chance to get reconnected with at the Exchange, which I thought was pretty cool. His name is Dr. Brian Laskin. And I had no idea, Brian, you were like a prolific author, and we're going to talk about one of your books today. But Brian, thanks for being back, or thanks for being on. I really appreciate you.
Yeah, likewise, and thanks for having me. It was great to reconnect with you at the Exchange, which was a great event, and I'm looking forward to talking with you today, for sure.
Yeah. Now, I will tell you, I was a little intimidated because you sat in my presentation, and I kind of knew who you were. I think we better, and I was like, okay, great. You know, you're always like, okay, he's pretty sharp, so I'm going to go and just do my thing. And then at the end, you were so complimentary, and then you added so many other thoughts. And I can't tell you how much I really appreciate. You actually gave me two of your books, and we're going to be talking about one of them today. But I always want to start here. We have a lot of young listeners, a lot of dental students. So tell us who Brian Laskin is. Give us a little bio. Where are you at? Who are you?
Yeah, thanks. And I, you know, it's a little bit of a windy road. My career isn't typically what the average dentist pathway is, and certainly wasn't on the roadmap when I went to dental school, right? But I grew my practices over 20 years and sold them about 6 years ago now, to focus on a software company, Opera DDS, that I scaled and sold that about 4.5 years ago to Vine Dental. We had about 25,000 practices using the application. Now I have another application, so I do a lot with startups in dentistry. So I do a lot with technology startups, particularly in dentistry. And then along the way, do a lot of standard development. Have a podcast like yourself, and written some books. So I think, you know, ultimately, I view myself as a serial technology entrepreneur within dentistry, who kind of as my second act, I guess, or maybe I'm in my third act now, starting off obviously, or hopefully, obviously as a dentist. So really switched from improving the oral health of patients one-on-one to then running practices, you know, one-to-many, and then now kind of industry-wide through standards, innovation, and education is kind of what I like to, you know, and really just looking to create positive change. I think we're at a spot in dentistry where we are in a very great spot. I think it's probably the best time to be in dentistry in a lot of ways. And I'm just doing what I can to help move the needle in a positive direction.
You are definitely doing that. And we were together at the Smile Source Exchange. I asked you this question, and I want you to share it on here. I think it's pretty cool. You do so many things and you're definitely like being an author. That seems like the hardest thing in the world. How did you decide to start writing? You shared with me, but I want you to share with our listeners, like your writing venture.
Yeah, I right now I love writing, but when I wrote my first book, the only reason why I got started was I heard two facts that had me write my first book. The first fact was that 90% of books aren't read past the first chapter. So I was like, I think I could write a pretty decent first chapter. And if only 1 out of 10 people read the rest of it and it sucks, guess what? That's not so bad. And number two, my marketing director said he bought a book that he heard somebody on a podcast talking about how he wrote a 200-page book, but when it came back from the editor, it was 20 pages. And he's like, and I'm not going to waste anybody's time. So he released a 20-page book. And I thought, I can write 20 pages. And particularly, I probably don't even have to write 20 pages. I just have to have the first part be good. And so then I sat down to write and, you know, looked up 190 pages later and that's how my first book got going. Turns out, you know, it's not the time that it takes to write the book. It's the time that it takes to get the knowledge to write the book. So and now that I've done this 3 times, and actually I'm already mapping out my fourth book. Really when I get motivated about a topic that I either know really well or I know enough, but I want to frame my own learning, it's the best way, you know. People say teaching is the best way to learn. I really think writing a book is the best way to learn about a topic because it forces you to be, you know, I don't want to put this into a volume and send it to people and be wrong. So it really forces me to organize my thinking in a way that I can translate a big topic to others. And then it's been phenomenal. And I love the process of writing now. And, you know, I'm not the kind of guy that, really, unless my son wants to watch a sports game, I don't spend my time watching sports or playing golf or something. So I would much rather either start a company or write a book or do something directionally aligned with my, you know, because I have professional missions and goals, right? And those are the most, other than, you know, my family and day-to-day life, that's what's most important to me, not hobbies and stuff like that. So I really focus on directionally achieving, you know, improving the oral health of people and now more overall health and has been wrapped into that more and more.
Yeah, I'd love to have you talk. We're going to do individual episodes on each book, but take us through the journey of the three books, the titles of the three books. What was the first book titled? That was your
first book. It's called The Patient First Manifesto.
Okay. And I have that one. That was your first one. Yeah,
that was my first one. Yeah, and that one I wrote basically because I saw a massive gap between the way dental professionals view dentistry and the way dental patients see dentistry. And I felt like the best way to grow your practice is to shift your perspective to be in alignment with the patients and what that means. And so that's what I wrote the book about. And, you know, I could go down that pathway a bit, but I'll go on to my next book.
Save that. Yeah. Save that. What was number two?
Number two is dental disorder. So dental disorder highlights the biggest problem in dentistry and how to solve it. And that's what we've been working on for about 4.5 years. And frankly, I start off the book saying, I hope that this book becomes old information because we hope we fix this problem. And I think we're about 80% of the way there. It just has to get executed on and which we're doing. So I think it's the biggest problem in dentistry and how to solve it.
Go
ahead. I'm sorry.
No. You go. Finish your thought.
Well, I was going to say that book is a little bit of a, how can I say this? If you've heard of like a burn book where I'm throwing shade at people in the industry for who I think are bad actors. Let me put it that way. So it's one person who read the book. That's a prominent person in dentistry told me that when he read it, he's like, oh, you're a provocateur. Right. So it's the kind of book where it's a truth teller book. Let me put it that way. Dental disorder. So it's kind of more the most controversial of the three. And then my third book is Unfair Care, which is a guidebook to patients on how to get the best healthcare possible. And that book was inspired by a personal story. My wife went through just getting on the other end of a challenging healthcare challenge. And we were working on solving these problems in dentistry. And then I realized that the problems are as big or bigger on the medical side. And there, nobody had written a guidebook to patients on how do you actually get the best healthcare possible. Not waiting for policy change or waiting for somebody else to do something. But today, how do you actually go about and take command of your own healthcare? And that's what the book is about, is how do you do that? And it also recognizes that oral health is the gateway to overall health. So
and that's the one we're going to be talking about today, right? And then I got to ask you, so you got a fourth one. You don't have to tell us the title, but what is it about? Just what is it about? Can you give us
it's a clinician's guidebook. It's a corollary to unfair care on, as a healthcare practitioner, as a dentist, specifically, but then also just more broadly as healthcare practitioners, how can we implement our side of the solve for unfair care, right? Healthcare isn't broken in the United States. Dentistry's not broken. It's rigged, and the system is rigged against wellness. It's rigged against caring for people. And also it's a guidebook to clinicians about how you actually create the math so that the more you show that you care for patients, the more you actually make. So how do we go from an unfair system to a more fair system for patients that's more profitable for us? That's what the fourth book is going to be.
I love it. So if you're listening to the podcast, this is how the podcast works. Brian, we're going to put links for all three of them in there. So you guys can flip up to the show notes. You can go right to it and you can purchase your own copy. But let's go to book number three, Unfair Care. Give us the why, and then we can go into the details. You know,
yeah,
what's
why,
it about?
The why was really personal. Like I said, my wife went through a personal healthcare challenge where at one point I said to a physician, so up to now you've been right 0% of the time. You know, what are you going to do? And the story is detailed out in the book a little bit. You know, what are you going to do to be more accurate next time? They told me about this test that they said that we scheduled for, and I'll make the story short. But ultimately, what ended up happening was they tried to cancel the test 5 different times because they said it cost thousands and thousands of dollars, and they wouldn't even tell us how much it cost. Literally, a life or death test. And then my wife went in and she was texting me while I'm at work saying, they're saying it costs thousands. How much can I spend on this life or death test? I don't know what you would say to your wife, right? But
whatever it costs.
I'm an idiot. So yeah. I actually set a number, right? A high number, but I actually put the number down. And then as soon as I sent it, I thought, holy crap, what if it's more than that? You dummy, like, right? So let me ask you this, okay? What do you think the test cost? When you're told 5 times it costs thousands and thousands of dollars, nobody pays for this test because it's so expensive, and we need to cancel it. Denied by insurance 3 times over the weekend.
I'm just going to pick a number, $35,000.
$35,000. Yeah, I was thinking it was going to cost $50,000. $3,200 is how much the test costs.
What?
Yep. Then I found out afterwards, the reason why it cost $3,200, and likely the reason why they tried to cancel it, is that it was denied by insurance. And so there's a law that says if it's denied by insurance, it costs $3,200. If you have health insurance that covers it, the hospital gets paid $8,000, right? Limited availability for the test. So they only want to have people who have insurance because they get paid more, right? So I think that that's unfair care, right? And so that motivated me to go, well, what else is going on here? What else? I mean, this isn't about my wife and this one test. This is the way the system works. And I guarantee you, everybody listening has a story like this, right?
Oh, Brian, I have one like 2 months ago. So there's a test called Galleri, which tests for over 50 different cancers. And I said, my doctor's like, it's very expensive. I don't know. Like, you could take it. I'm like, well, he's like, well, insurance doesn't cover it. I'm like, I'll pay cash for it. It was $700. I'm like, why wouldn't you offer that to everybody and let me as the patient and the consumer decide that, right? So I'm sure everybody listening has a couple of stories on that. So go a little bit deeper. Like, what does that mean not only And your focus, correct me if I'm wrong, was like you're passionate about dentistry, but this is a global issue. This is a really big global issue. Go a little bit deeper on this. What are we really talking about?
Well, and it's, I should say, oral health is healthcare, right? I think we're recognizing that more and more. So we're not exempt from this. And in fact, there's one chapter in my book that says what medicine gets right and wrong and what dentistry gets right and wrong. I like to say we're messed up in different ways, okay? And when we talk about bringing these two together, what's going to happen left to inertia is that both are going to get worse. That's the way it works. So we have to chart a pathway forward, I believe, that makes sense, or it's going to get worse. And so, you know, and part of that is in the book. Like, what's the pathway forward? Now, you know, when we're talking about going deeper on like your test result, there's a thing, why doesn't it work this way? There's one simple reason why, because they make more money not doing it that way. In fact, I saw it at a private equity group that they had thrown up a slide that said, if we focused on wellness, would healthcare be profitable? They don't know, and nobody wants to do the math because they're making so much money the way it is, right? This isn't random. It's not like people aren't smart that design these systems. These are highly engineered systems that are wickedly smart people optimizing for profitability, not optimizing for wellness. That's the way it is. Good, bad, I don't care. That's pragmatically how it is. So how do you, as a patient, actually leverage this? Because we have the best healthcare available in the U.S. And this isn't even this is a global issue, by the way. This isn't like a U.S. issue. Every system has issues that I believe the only answer is for you to take command of your healthcare. Nobody else is going to, would you just like leave other aspects, such major aspects, up to somebody else? I mean, you don't have to know everything, but you have to be in charge. You have to be commanding your care. You have to be the one selecting your providers, asking the right questions, preparing for appointments, because there's only one common denominator in every visit that you have in healthcare, and it's you. That's the reality of it. Nobody's going to your appointments with you, right? And so I think we don't fix healthcare. What I think is going to transform the system is when people get involved in their own healthcare and they ask the right questions, a small percent of people will actually transform the entire industry to be better for everybody. And that's what's laid out in the book.
All right, talk about being provocative. Like you're provoking some emotions because I've experienced this firsthand. I'll tell you a quick story and then I want you to comment. So about 3 years ago, my physician, who I loved, older guy, really fit. One time he said this to me, Brian, after COVID, he goes, okay, listen, you're fat. I'm like, you what? And he was so good. He's like, listen, I'm not going to sit here and offer, like, he cared about me. He cared about me a lot. He would spend time with me. So I loved him. I really loved him. Well, one day he comes in for an appointment. He goes, well, it's going to be our last appointment. I'm like, what? He's like, I'm going to retire. I'm like, you're fit. You're happy. He's like, well, I can't do it anymore in the system. And he's like, that's all I can tell you is like, the system doesn't allow me to care the way I want to care. And I'm going to hand you off to somebody else. I'm like, why? And then he's like, I can't talk about it. So I found out later because I got the new doctor who had no time. And she was so stressed out. She could only see me at like 7:30 to 7:45. And she was like shaking when I met her. And I talked to a person at the front and she said this. She didn't care. She's like, we can't find any doctors around here because nobody wants to work what their system is allowing to pay these doctors. And so you're just gonna have to be patient. And it was like months to get a new doctor. So I think we're losing some of our best docs because they can't afford to live in this system. They can't care and they can't make enough money. And that's, am I on the right track in a way that it's exacerbating the issue?
Absolutely. And it's, you know, you bring up a great point. It's not that the healthcare professionals aren't caring and wanting to do a good job. They're in a system that's just as stacked against them as it is against patients. And, you know, your physician probably had, I don't know how to frame this, but was smart enough or tuned in enough to go, I can't practice this way. Very few do. Very few even realize what's going on. They don't like put the, because, you know, when you're in the busy day-to-day hustle and bustle about trying to provide for patients and stuff, you don't realize how far off track things have gotten. You know, I did a presentation at one event and about unfair care, and a physician walked up to me afterwards and said, "You don't know how right you are. She treats pancreatic cancer." And she said, "There's a drug available that could cure a large percentage of my patients that we don't even talk about because it's so expensive." Right? I mean, this is just the way, and she hadn't even really thought about it that way until she heard me talk about the book and how, because they're just in the system going to, and we do that in dentistry too, by the way, right? We're not immune to this. It's just different problems, right? You know, I think dentistry, one of the things that we've done that we're further ahead, still room for improvement, is on prevention than our medical colleagues. But there's other things that I think we are just behind on too. I mean, I think, I mean, going back to your story, it seems like you had a rare physician that actually paid attention to what was going on as the, you know, it's like the crab that's in the pot that's boiling, that actually understood that the water was getting hotter, right? That's not commonplace, but that is, it definitely is that healthcare professionals are boiling in the system, and most of them don't even realize it.
Yeah, I'll tell you and our listeners the rest of the story, but then I want to get back to the book and the how. Is I was so frustrated that I just went to the major health system here. It's Frater Health System here in Milwaukee, and they have what's called the Executive Health Program. So it's a program you pay cash for. It's $2,500, and they only see two patients a day. I'm like, I don't care what it costs. I'm going to go. I was assigned a physician and a team of people for two. I mean, they only have two patients. So the whole day they do head to toe. And at the end, I love the doc I got. He's like, "Well, it's up to you, but you can assign me as your primary physician." I'm like, no brainer, game on. And it's amazing when you're willing to pay cash. Now, you only pay for the service of them being able to point. So, you know, if there's additional things, it goes through the regular process, but you get somebody's attention for a full day type of a thing. And now I'm just learning what you said in the book is like, you just got to take care. Now I want to go back to what you said, unfair care. People that are listening to this are going to go, "Brian, you're striking a chord. Give me the bullet points that you teach in the book." And I'm going to encourage you all that are listening, read the book. So the question is how, like, what do you talk about in the book and how can I learn from this?
Great. So, you know, I think the book, like I said, is a guidebook. So you kind of, you don't need to put everything into practice at once. In fact, that would be very challenging, right? So, number one, I recommend getting access to all of your information. So your dental records, your medical records, all of your records, and consolidate them as much as possible. And that's kind of, you know, spoiler alert, our application CAIR, CAIR, is designed to do that. So, how, you know, the sort of like how you get access to your data and make decisions is through an application like CAIR, right? So getting access to your information is number one. Number two is selecting your team of healthcare providers like you did, right? You didn't just sit around and say, "This new physician is the, no, this is a commodity. Let's just roll with whoever I saw." You took command. You said, "This isn't the level that I expect. I'm going to find somebody that meets my expectations." So I outline in the book is what you should look for, what questions you should ask, and what kind of people you could have on your team. And then the rest, like other parts of the book are, you know, things like how to look at, you know, it's a massive amount of healthcare, of hospital bills that have discrepancies that are used, like it's 80% that are in the hospital's favor. So how do you actually decode that? How do you negotiate or complain, or not really complain, but how do you bring up the fact to your healthcare providers when you're being overcharged, when there's additional services that you shouldn't have been charged for? So how do you decode that? And then just even simple things like what are the questions you should be asking? How do you prepare for an appointment? All of the things that you should know to take command of your healthcare. But it starts off with actually getting all of your information, selecting the right providers, and building your care team. Because like you said, you know, if you're not going to take command of your own healthcare, at least having a point person that does it for you, I would argue you have to be part of the team though, right? It's kind of like one of you is the coach, the other one's the quarterback, but you both have to be on the team to win, right? And so that's kind of what I detail out in the book. And then there's all sorts of information about, you know, lots of stories about patients, success stories of people who have taken command of their care and how it's transformed it. You know, there's so many people, you know, we all hear the stories. You know, I had an autoimmune disease for 10 years. Nobody knew what was going on. And then I just met one person and bam, they knew exactly the test to run. And now I feel much better. I mean, everybody knows multiple people like that, right? And so what I'm trying to do is give people the information so that you don't have to go through the decade to find the right provider to, you know, or, and even like, let's focus on, and how to focus on wellness. Like you said, when your physician comes in and says you're fat, really, maybe not the most gentle way, but what he's really saying is, let's focus on getting you healthy versus waiting till you get sick, right?
Yeah.
Which is the way most physicians operate. It's like, oh, everything's fine, even though you're overweight. Let's wait till you get sick and then we'll treat you for diabetes and all the other complications that come down the road, right? So yeah. That's kind of what we outline in the book is all of those. And then also the importance, because just like oral health affects overall health, you know, we like to say in dentistry that the mouth is connected to the body, but so is every other system, right? Every other system. So connecting everything makes sense. Dentistry is separate from medicine. You know what else is separate from medicine? Other components of medicine, right? Mental health is treated differently. You know, if you see an orthopedic surgeon, I guarantee you they're not probably coordinating with your immunologist, right? I mean, everything's separate. So it's up to you to make sure that you look at your whole body, whether you do it yourself and or you do it with a primary care physician, typically that you pay out of pocket for, like you did. I mean, I think you can do it yourself. You can hire somebody to help do it with you. But I would say any way you slice it, if you're not actively involved in your care, you're not getting the best care you can.
Yeah. And I think this has been a way of people in feeling for a long time. As evidence, I mean, I think Mayo Clinic, when people say, I'm fine, I'm just going to Mayo, they've established that as like, I'm just going to pay for it, you know, and get the top care in the world. We've seen that. I actually had a conversation with a dentist last week about that. Like, they can't get answers. And I had a cousin who couldn't get answers. He had a tumor and he kept coming back and no doctor could tell him. He went to Mayo, paid for it. And they're like, we know exactly what that is. I think people are willing to pay for it finally if they're on that side of things, correct?
I've got to tell you, I'm in Minneapolis. I go to the Mayo Clinic for the executive program, exactly like you're talking about. There's no way in hell I'm just going to leave it up to them. Because they, you know, I think it's as good as it gets, just like you're referencing. Lots of gaps. That's all I would say. Like, as somebody that is, you know, I'm not saying the program's not world class, the best there is, I still wouldn't leave it up to them. I still, anybody seeing the Mayo Clinic for the executive health program like myself, it's still up to you. I mean, if you don't care about your health, fine, do whatever you want, right? But if you want it to actually be healthy, it's up to you to take command of your health, regardless of if you're paying out of pocket like I do to go see the Mayo Clinic for their executive health program. I think it's still up to you to help take command of it. Because those physicians there, my physician's awesome. He's not going to do it. He's got other patients to see. He has restrictions on him, just like every other physician. And he's not going to he doesn't have access to my dental records, right? And if we as dentists believe oral health is the gateway to overall health, right there, unless you're bringing it together, well, we're working on that. Like we are, I think within two years, your physician will be able to see your dental records, but and we're solving that problem. But today, if you don't do it through care, I don't think there is another way to do it. And if we believe that oral health is the gateway to overall health, guess what? You have to provide that information to your physicians.
Yeah. I'm going to throw two concepts and loop in what you just said earlier in the interview. We're dealing with a very complex system that's very intelligent. You know, they're using AI now to see patterns in cost structures. And another concept, let's put that concept together with the reason hospitals do this is they don't really know what it costs. And so, like, you can have two people come in for the same thing, and you can look at what the final tally was, and they'll be completely different. But that's not really an accident. Help me decode those two concepts. Like, they actually make money on the whole gray aspect of we don't know what this is going to cost before we get into this. Correct? Or am I
you're
just
exactly
off
right. The convoluted complexity, hard to understand, all of that is designed for profitability. What I would argue against is the second part of that. Like, yeah, for you it's different, but for them there's a standard deviation. There's the what could happen. You know, maybe one patient is over here and one patient's over here. But look, like in dentistry, we charge the same for every single crown, right? Now I know there's people that I come in and that crown is going to take me 10 minutes total, like in my time. There's another patient that's flopping around like a fish. It's on, you know, number one and I have to stand on my head to do it. Same price, right? Why? Because overall, we kind of know what a crown is like, right? The same thing is true of our medical treatment, right? Now, they don't know if this patient, you know, if it's an oncologist, if this patient's going to have chemo and this one's not or whatever, but they have a pretty good idea of the journey this patient's going to be on based on their diagnosis with some standard deviation. Now, so they can predict, they could predict this, they could have a single cost and they could go forward with it, but it's more profitable not to. And there's whole sections of the book where I talk about how the complexity is profitable, right? And so I don't think that we're going to change the complexity. What we can change is the lack of transparency, right? That there's laws and regulations that aren't being followed that you as a patient have to stand up and say, hey, I expect this, or, you know, this is the way the world works and you're not being compliant. So it's time for you to give me my information. Right? And, whether it's the cost of a test, which is, you know, blatantly, they have to tell you that, but many don't. So you have power as a patient, but you don't have power if you don't understand it and you don't leverage it. And so I think that's the key. We're not going to be able to change the complexity in the system by just sitting around and throwing our hands in the air saying, oh, it's complex, I can't understand it. No, it's our job to understand it. And frankly, they're using AI for stuff. You're exactly right. Guess what? You can too. I don't know about you, but you know, I submitted for a patent and I got stuff back, like 9 different cases from the patent office about like that they combined all of these 9 things. And I'm just like, I can't decode this, but what did I do? I uploaded it all into ChatGPT and I said, you know, here's the response. And it did the analysis for me. AI is great at that. You can upload your hospital bills if you want to. There's ways for us as a patient, we have so much more power than most people are leveraging. And I'm not saying we want to be disrespectful, but I believe we have to advocate for our own care. That's kind of the whole shebang. It's like, how do you actually do that though? If you actually want to advocate for yourself, what do you do? I didn't know where to start. So I had to write a book about it.
Yeah. And I'm going to encourage everybody, read this book. Now, I do want to ask you a question. It's anyone's guess. But Brian, we're going to do a follow-up 5 years from today. What's the system look like? What's your guess 5 years from now, what this looks like?
The healthcare system in general or dentistry more specific?
Let's do healthcare system, dentistry in general, and then where patients are going to have to be in the middle of this.
That's a lot. So I talk about what, you know, a couple terms that we coined, dentistry 3.0 and that I call connected dentistry. So if dentistry 1.0, and some people have, let's say, borrowed our trademarks on this. So if dentistry 1.0 is modern analog dentistry, four-handed dentistry, tooth-colored fillings, the way we practice dentistry today. When I got out of dental school right around the year 2000, we were transitioning to digital dentistry with, you know, practice management systems and CAD/CAM. And most technologies today are digital technologies, right? Or I should say, that's like, but when people think of AI reading an X-ray, that's still a digital technology. Where we're headed for the next 20 years, I think, is connected dentistry, connecting more directly with patients, connecting our offices and aggregations like the Grove multi-practices, multi-locations, connecting with through great companies like SmileSource, right? Connecting with our medical colleagues, medical dental interoperability, which is a big thing that we're doing. How do we actually connect our systems? So your medical history is this, you can look at the medication list that's on record with your with the physician, which we're actually, we'll have that ready by the end of the year. So how as a dentist, do I look at the medical history that's going on at the physician, right? And I think the technologies, both in medicine and in dentistry, are going to fit that theme. When we look back 5 years from now, to your point, you go, what are the big transformative things that have changed? It's going to be deepening the connections between our systems, between ourselves, between our patients, right? That's what's, and in dentistry, what is that going to look like? It's going to look much more like medicine from the perspective of, we're going to have to level up our technology and systems to be able to connect with our physicians, refer back and forth seamlessly. Right now, 46% of patients that get referred from a dentist to an endodontist never go. Half the people you're referring to an endodontist never go. That should be horrific to everybody listening right now.
That's crazy.
So let's stop that within the next 5 years. Right? Let's close the loop on referrals. Let's expand it so that we can work as teams virtually. Right? We have these supercomputers in our pockets that we're not even leveraging at all, both in our practices and for our patients. Right? So let's change that. Let's get rid of the approximately one third of dental emergencies that end up in an ER. Like, that's moronic. I think we'll lick that problem in the next 5 years. That's aggressive. It's a good goal, right? Yeah. And as a patient, what does it mean? It means that you know, again, going back to like my focus, I think more and more patients are going to wake up and going to start taking command of their own care. And I think if that scares you as a healthcare provider, you should probably pay attention because the ship has already left the dock, right? We have to get to a reality where patients are co-treatment planning with us. They're involved more in their care than ever before, and they're empowered with their own information to make better decisions on their for themselves. And it is our job to meet them where they are. I think healthcare is going to become much more convenient, but I also think that we're in danger. There's some dangers that we have to circumvent. I think if dentistry becomes part of medicine, it's going to get worse for everybody, but insurance companies. And so I think we as an industry have to maintain our autonomy while we deepen our connections. It sounds counterintuitive, but it's true. We have to maintain our autonomy, but we need to deepen, we have to have our connections back and forth with physicians be much more expanded, not just with physicians, but that's a long answer to your question, but it's, you know, hopefully complete-ish.
Brian, that was brilliant. Drop the mic. I am totally picking up what you're putting down. I think you're on the money. On the money, buddy. I don't even know what to say. Like, I think you're on to something big. I was going to ask you for some final thoughts, but like, that's, I don't think you could say it any better than that. But let's do this. I'm going to put links to the books in there, but if somebody's listening to this and they're driving, where can I go to find out more about what you're doing, more about your books? I want people to follow you. I want people to pick up your message. Where do I go?
Well, if you go want to pick up everything, which is, you know, there's a lot there, right? Standards and all sorts of stuff that we do. You can go to my name, Brian Laskin, brianwithay.com. Or if you want to know more specifically about like what you can do to start implementing things, the main company is Tooth Apps. So toothapps.com. There'll be links to, I'm brianlaskin.com. There'll be links to my books and everything else. And I think there's, you know, and if you want to get involved, shoot me a note. I think that there's, you know, there's a lot of work for all of us to do in dentistry. But I think it's exciting. I'm going to go back to one point I said. I think that all of this change is really creating the biggest opportunities in dentistry that we've ever had. And I think that, you know, for those that want to be engaged in the profession, I think it's better than ever. The flip side is also true. I think that the dentists that just want to like coast and not want to think about doing things any differently, I kind of think you're hosed, right? So, you know, I'll leave you on a controversial point there where I think that there's, you know, more and more our industry, like the world's, is becoming a duality of those who are thriving and those who are going the opposite direction. And I think the difference is whether you're adjusting the winds of your sail of your practice to what's happening, because it's more important now than ever.
Oh, buddy, so well said. Is this okay? I'm going to call this voluntolding. I'm going to have you back and we're going to do two separate episodes. I want to do one on Patient First, your first book, and then if we can, Dental Disorders, we'll provide.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'd love
read
to.
A little. Great. Yeah. So, buddy, I am so grateful that you were on today. So thank you for being on.
Of course. And thanks for you. I mean, I just love what you're doing. And just, you obviously have such a, like myself, I think, a great passion for dentistry. And I think that really comes across. So thank you.
Awesome. It's my pleasure, man. This is going to be fun. So, Brian, do me a favor, stick around while I say goodbye to everybody else. But thank you guys for listening to the Best Practices Show podcast. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. I told Brian before we hit the go button, like, I have one goal, like, just give these people good information, make them think. And Brian, you did that today. So if you enjoyed today, do us a favor, hit the share button with your, you know, with this podcast, share it with your friends, get the word out there. I am going to encourage you to get Brian's books. And again, we're going to put them down in the show notes. Just flip up to the show notes. It's going to take you right to the books. Click on them, get them. I only have two of the three. I am now going to have three of the three. And then you can listen to the follow-up episodes. I don't know when they're going to happen, but we'll post them here on the podcast and you can get the synopsis of those books. But thank you guys for listening. We just love all the feedback you guys give us. And we're going to keep bringing it. So until we see you guys next time or you hear from us next time, keep watching or keep listening to the Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy your day. So there you have it. Another great episode. Hope you guys enjoyed it. And thank you for showing up. I just want to thank you for being here and sharing the good word with your friends. And if you're really enjoying the podcast, could you do me a favor? Could you go to wherever you consume the podcast and just give us a 4 or 5 star review? Here's what that does. It allows us to find other great people like you. I love this profession so much. I'm going to spend the rest of my professional life finding great information so that you can consume it and your friends can consume it so that you can create a better practice and a better life. So keep spreading the word and we will see you guys soon. Have a great day, everybody.